start on Friday, one pasuk in Zechariah, Perek Yudbeis. We're towards the end, and we're up. We did pasuk Yudal. Just one pasuk. One pasuk was Ve'egdas Makli Hasheni Yisachelim L'Hafir Esva'achva Ben Yehuda Uvein Yisrael.
On page 824.
So all we learned yesterday, we delved into this very fascinating pasuk, and this pasuk we describes, we spend the whole Friday on, is this idea that Jewish sovereignty, in history, historically, did the Jews have sovereignty of their country? And we know that during the time of the Bayis Rishon, absolutely they did, until Nebuchadnezzar came along. And then during time, but thank you very much. I think I'm allergic to cream cheese. I think I've discovered that. When you gave me, I think I become a lactose intolerance. Cream, I don't know. Cream cheese doesn't seem to do well. My stomach doesn't seem to agree with it. I don't know. Maybe I ate something else. Lately, I've been having a lot of issues with my stomach. I eat certain things, and then whoo. I realize I made a mistake. I should not have eaten.
Yeah. There's a tablet you can take before you have dairy.
And that will allow you to allow you to consume
it. That's anophilus you can take.
When I was a kid, I can eat anything. Power. I can just gobble up a human garbage can. Now, I'll be very careful what I eat.
Baruch Hashem?
You eat the wrong thing, I'm done for a week. All right. Let's. So over here we have this idea of Jewish sovereignty. At what point in time in Jewish history did the Klal Yisrael have sovereignty? And during the Bayis Rishon they had sovereignty. The Bayis Sheni, they really didn't have sovereignty. That's the truth, and that's exactly what this pasuk comes to teach us. This pasuk over here says that once the Malchus of the Yevanim, the Chashmonaim was the transition of the loss of sovereignty. After the era of the Chashmonaim came to an end, it was the Romans. The Romans entered to basically take over. Well, first it was Hordes, and I don't know the Jewish history, I don't remember all the details, but it was one episode after another, where basically Klal Yisrael did not have shalita, they did not have authority over their own land, over the Beis HaMikdash. And the truth is, even in the time of from the very beginning of the Bayis Sheni, we all know that the Bayis, there was the Shar Shushan Habira on the gate of the Bayis Sheni was what we would say today, if you want to make a comparison, was the American flag. Can you imagine you go to Eretz Yisrael, and there there's the American flag. Don't you find it very funny, Mark, when you go in America, all of the traditional modern shuls, modern Orthodox shuls, they have two flags, the American flag and the Israeli flag. In Israel, there's no American flag in shul. You only have the Israeli flag. You know what's so funny? In Israel, they worship the American flag a lot more than we worship the Israeli flag. That's the irony. There does not the Neha the Deha. It should be the other way around. It should be that in Israel, they should have the American flag and the Israeli flag. In America, we should have just the Israeli flag. All right, in any event, it's very, very funny. In any event, in when you came to the base of the Bayis Sheni, on the gate of the Bayis Sheni was the Shar Shushan Habira. It was a tribute. It was the equivalent of having the American flag in your shul. It was basically an acknowledgement. Who paid for this? Who has given permission? It was the Persian government, Koresh. Koresh, Daryavesh, Haparsia.
It's like if something says... This project funded by Governor Cuomo.
Exactly. Exactly. The base was funded by the Persian government. They insisted. It seems, if I'm not mistaken, is that this was a whose idea was this? It wasn't our idea. It was their idea to put us in our place to make sure don't rebel. It was a statement: watch out, we're watching you. If you're going to rebel, then we're going to take away your sovereignty. And I can imagine they had to pay homage, they probably had to pay taxes, who knows what they had to do in order to maintain their good relationship. The only time there was sovereignty was It wasn't the will, it was during time the Chash Menoyim. The only time, it's not loud enough.
Raise it a little bit, yeah.
The vlog, okay, you know, so maybe we should try during the break, maybe. He told me I can use his machine. I have to set it up though. I have to give the extension cord because the power's over here. All right, tomorrow, Mir Tashem, okay, we're going to work on the microphone because people are coming back, so we're going to try to get the volume up. The only time when there was sovereignty was during the time of the Chash Menoyim. And during the Chash Menoyim is when it was absolutely, they broke away from the Yevonim and they had total sovereignty. But the trade-off was, what this pasuk says, it was not a Malchus, not from Yehuda, and not from Yisrael. It was Lohosir Es Ho'achva Ben Yehuda Uvein Yisrael. I mean, it was a transition. The Malchus is supposed to come from Shevet Yehuda. The Chash Menoyim was a Chayro Hashah. It was a temporary situation allowing Klal Yisrael to have their own sovereignty. But it was not ideal. That was the transition to where there was nothing. Was where the Goyim took over, the Romans took over, and hoarded this, as we learned in the Metzudas of it, and there was no sovereignty, it was completely under the jurisdiction of the Goyim. And as we know today there is no, today we don't have anything at all, today it's, we spoke about this Jewish, the Halachic state, the Israeli state, and the Jewish state. Three different types of power, of sovereignty, Sholech and Mordechai. We have three. This is a very big topic of discussion for religious Jews relating to the state of Israel. Hey Eir is coming up very soon, right? Hey Eir is, what is it, 73rd?
Sunday, it's a
Mukdam. Mukdam. What is it? 73rd or 74th?
Thursday.
How many years is the state? 73 or 74? 73 years coming up around the corner. 73 years of the state of Israel. And how does a Jew, a religious Jew, relate to the state of Israel? This is something that this is serious business. This is not something to make a litzanus about. This is very serious. A religious Jew who is shomer Torah u'mitzvos, shomer Shabbos, no matter what your hashkafa is. If you are a Shomer Shabbos, Shomer Torah Mitzvahs, today, how do you relate to Medinas Yisrael? There's something you cannot avoid there's nothing to make believe. How do you relate to Medinas Yisrael? What if you would want to make changes? How would you want you have the power to vote. Every citizen has the power to vote and to have influence on the outcome of what the Medinas Yisrael is. How do you relate to it? Is it an ideal that there should be an Israeli state with all the connotations of what that means? Or should there be a halachic state, which means every single thing that the Medinas Yisrael does should be according to the laws of the Torah? And then there's something which is in the middle, a Jewish state, where it's not lahalacha, but it's not a secular state. It's Israeli has a connotation of it being one of the nations of the world. You know, there is the United States, there's Mexico, there is North Korea, there's Australia, and there's Israel. Come to Israel, completely independent country. Or is there something called a Jewish state, which is the Messiah of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and Moshe, and the Torah HaKadosha? Is it lahalacha? Does it follow the laws of Shulchan Aruch? No. But it's Jewish. It is the flavor and the character of the Torah HaKadosha with the Messiah and the Emun of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. But it's not lahalacha. Many people will say, how could that be? How could you have such a thing where you have a makom that carries within it the mesorah of the avos and whose foundation is the Torah, but yet Shulchan Aruch somehow got lost in between the lines. How could you have such a reality? Well, guess what? That's what we have today.
That's right.
That's exactly what we do have today, to a very large degree. And many people, many, many thinking people tell us...
After the Chorban, that's what you had in Eretz Yisrael also.
No, you didn't.
They didn't have a Gemara then.
They had nothing. It was not. They had no authority altogether. Who was in Shul? The British.
Even David's time, they had a Shulchan Aruch.
What, David?
Yeah.
We assume they did. It was
the
Torah was not put in writing. It was but it was halachic. We assume that during the time of the Bayis Rishon, the Bayis Sheni, we assume it was a halachic state. I mean, that is the assumption. I mean, I don't know in all the pratim, but today, before the Medina Yisrael, it wasn't a state. Period. There was no one there. It was under the control of the Turks, the British. Under the Christians, under the Muslims, there was no Jews. No, you couldn't lift a finger. Today, they have total sovereignty. They can do whatever they want. They can blow up the whole.
As you pointed out in a number of times, we ain't ready for a halachic state.
Right. So the many of the Gedolei Yisrael, even the very religious, they are very, very frightened at the prospect of attempting that there should be a halachic state, because halacha it wouldn't work. It would not work. It would not work. Having a halachic state would not work in any way whatsoever. I vaguely remember reading even from Rabbi Yashiv and from other Gedolim. It's not an option. It's not an option until the time of Mashiach that there should be a halachic state where everything shall be done according to the halacha. How could that possibly? How could a religious Jew say such a thing? Well, we live in a very dangerous world.
They can't form a government now. Can you imagine if they try to form a consensus?
This is a big topic. Maybe whether we have to do research and go through all of the issues.
No consensus on.
Go through all of the issues and the reasons why the state of Israel ideally has to be set up today until Mashiach comes with a government that are people that are basically not Shomer Torah mitzvahs. I know it sounds bizarre. And if everyone, they know what that would mean. It would mean that if everyone in Eretz Yisrael was shomer Torah mitzvos b'liyotzei min haklal, basically the ideal would be for Jews to hire goyim to run the country, according to non halacha, because it just wouldn't work.
But this is all academic.
It's all academic.
Because the majority of the people don't want it.
You should know it's not even so simple
that.
It's not so simple. Israel is getting more and more complicated as we speak. Every minute, the country gets more and more complicated. The numbers of the religious Jews are just exploding, and even the irreligious are very sympathetic. A lot of the irreligious Jews are very sympathetic to the values of the religious. There's a lot of ugly, ugly issues. Let's not kid ourselves about the draft and about you name it, and you see what goes on at the show. I mean, what goes on, the riots and this and that, it's horrible. But the numbers, study the numbers. Study the numbers in the election and see what's going on. And even the totally irreligious are not, as far as the hashkaf of the country, as far as the approach to dealing with the issues, are not so far removed from the approach of the religious element. Any event, let's put that aside now. I just find this to be very, very fascinating, because over here, this pasuk is a quote of the Mitzudas David. Is an incredibly powerful statement. It's an awesome statement. It's Himalaya, Zechariah. You see the Ruach HaKodesh, the Nevuah of Zechariah, to make such a statement according to the parish of the Mitzudas David, where he says the time is going to come where Hashem says, I want to lead the Jewish people with a sovereignty, a Jewish sovereignty, a religious sovereignty. But I realize it's not going to work. And therefore, Vo'egda Esmakli Hasheni, the second staff was Makal of Chivlim, which was harshness. And taught this page 824 of harshness is going to be shattered. And basically, I will not lead you. There will not be Jewish sovereignty. Jewish sovereignty will be given over to the Ummah Yisraelim. That's why it's been for almost 2,000 years. During the time of the Bayis Sheni already, then there was no sovereignty. And then only until 73 years ago, there was also no sovereignty. And the fact that today, in 73 years, we have a degree of sovereignty is an incredible revelation that this, according to the Metzudas David, to some degree, this pasuk has come to an end. This era of Egda Esmakli Hashni Esachav LeHafer Eshwa Achva Ben Yehuda Ben Yisrael, no longer will there be leadership that will come from one of the two. It's over today. Because today, Baruch Hashem, to a degree, it's recognized that the Jews rule over themselves. Who's in charge in Eretz Yisrael? It's an independent state. Listen, they may be bowing backwards to the United States of America and then watching their back, but the bottom line is they have their own leadership today. And that's an amazing, this is an amazing revelation that this curse, to a degree, has come to an end. And something we always like to talk about, and especially today, you cannot ignore this, the fact that the Hashgacha Pradzah, we're learning this today, and the Sim Masech the Shkolim, what is a sign of sovereignty in the state? The ultimate sign of sovereignty. If you mint your own coins, when you mint your own coins, that's a statement, a powerful statement that you are indeed independent. The Jewish people have not minted their own coins since the Bar Kokhba revolt in the aftermath of the Churban Bayis Sheni. The last time Jews minted their own coins was for a period of 2.5 years, approximately 50 years after the Churban Bayis Sheni. And when's the next time they minted their own coins? 72 years ago. With the establishment of the State of Israel, they minted their own coins. Shekel Chodosh. Okay, that's the Chodosh, the Shkolim. They have minted their own coins. And that's an incredible thing. When you are a country that mints their own coins, this is a statement. We are independent. HaKesef Ya'ane Es HaKol. And it's not a coincidence that today, we learn Masech, today's the Sima Masech, the Shkolim, coins. And the coins that the Gemara discusses are coins that were minted during the time of the Bayis Sheni. The Bayis Sheni and the Bayis Rishon, the Bayis Sheni, these were Jewish coins. And today we have Jewish currency. I know not everyone is so enamored with the people they put on the dollar bills. Not everyone even wants to look at the people. they're not exactly Shomrei Torah Mitzvahs. They have not yet put the Rambam yet on one of the bills. Maybe are you familiar with this? All the different.
Yeah.
Did they put the Rambam?
Yes.
They did put the Rambam. Which bill?
I don't know.
There must be some bills where they have some rabbinic figures. It cannot be
that the Shomrei Torah of Mitzvos won't use that currency.
Of course they'll use that currency. Money? Who won't use money? All right. Let's now learn the Rashi. Rashi, this one. I won't finish up this section. Pasuk Yudal on the Rashi. Rashi, back on page 824. Ve'egda esmalki hashe esmakli hasheni higiglesi es tzidkia. Rashi learns the second makel is Tzidkiyahu Hamelech. He was the last king of the Jewish people. He went into exile. Tzidkiyahu. He was blinded. He was taken. He fled. He was caught by Nebuchadnezzar. He was taken to Bavel. He was blinded. He was blinded. Yes, 10 sons were murdered, and he was blinded. Some learned that Nebuchadnezzar never blinded him, but Nebuchadnezzar forced him to watch him murder his 10 sons, and the tears that flowed from his eyes in pain observing the murder of his 10 sons is what made him blind. Okay, simply we learned that he poked out his eyes. That's not necessarily true. The pain of crying, watching what he did to his sons is what caused him to become blind. Then it says, Es Achoivlim, Es Rishi Hadar. I'm going to cut the second makel. So he's learning over here. There are two separate expressions. Es Achoivlim, Es Rishi Doiroi. Kiu Tzadik V'Doiroi Rishoi. Now this is controversial. Is Tzidkiyah really a Tzadik? Not everyone says that. They're conflicting Mamore Chazal, if Tzidkiyahu is called a tzaddik or was a rasha. On the one hand, we call him, it says here in Rashi, he was a tzaddik. He was righteous, he acknowledged, he was matztik, Chazal said he was matztik olav esadin. He acknowledged that Hashem was correct. On the other hand, he disobeyed a direct order from the Navi that would have saved Klal Yisrael. The Navi said to Tzidkiyo, Yirmiyo said to Tzidkiyo, surrender. Nebuchadnezzar is here, open the gates, raise the white flag, surrender. If you will surrender, he will let you live. He will let everyone live. He will destroy the Beis HaMikdash, but you will not go into Golos. And we always talk about this idea, if we would not have gone into Golos, there would not have been intermarriage, because there would be no one to marry other than your own. It would have saved the intermarriage problem. Today there's an 80% intermarriage problem amongst religious Jews. But in Eretz Yisrael, irreligious Jews, who do they marry? They marry their own. There's no intermarriage problem in Eretz Yisrael. There's very little. There are a few. There are a few workers. They import some people to do some work. It's minor. Okay, but it's relative to what goes on outside the audits. It's minor. So if the Klal Yisrael would not have gone, when they Klal Yisrael went into Golos, 95% of Klal Yisrael intermarried. Literally. The numbers are staggering in a short period of 70 years. How did that happen? No one really knows. I think I was talking to someone on Shabbos about this, and the conversation, the suggestions were, Esther Hamalka. Esther Hamalka set a very bad example. Because Esther Hamalka, with the great miracle of Purim, people said, if Esther Hamalka can be married to a non-Jew, why can't I? What's the difference? Isn't that a frightening thought? And who are the people who, by the way, then we discussed this a couple of weeks ago, who were the people that intermarried? They were the children that were terrorized by Haman HaRasha.
Where did you hear that?
That was our own Chiddush. Do the math. If you do the math, when Ezra comes up to Eretz Yisrael and he looks around and he sees all of you guys intermarried, how did this happen? Either you divorce your wives or forget it. It's over. And they listened. Who are the people that intermarried? Who were the ages? These were the people who were the children in the generation. In the generation of Haman. These were the children. The children, the Midrashim tell us, the people who suffered the most in the Gezer of Haman were the children. Haman came into the Beis Medrash. Mordechai was teaching the children, says this in the Medrash, and he said to the children, when the day comes, I'm going to start with you. You, the children. He terrorized them. And the Gemara there says that the mothers of these children, they came, brought them food, and they said to their mother, no, we don't want the food. We were preparing to die. They wailed. You don't think there was collateral damage? You don't think that bring today in all the professional psychologists and all the therapists, and they'll give you a big long speech about whatever a children sees when he's young, even though he holds it in. It makes a profound effect on his psyche. And these children were terrorized by Haman, and no one can fathom the effects, but it's not a coincidence.
They were saved.
But there was damage.
Like years later,
it was saved, but the collateral damage, damage was there. And it's not, no one knows for sure, but it's not a coincidence that the question is a major, major question. How could it be that in one generation after the Churban Bayis Sheni, the whole Klal Yisrael decided to intermarry? How do you explain that?
The Churban Bayis Rishon.
Churban Bayis Rishon, correct. The Churban Bayis Rishon. How do you explain that?
There were no women.
How do you explain? There were women. No, there were plenty of women.
Please.
How do you explain that? For every man, there's a woman. Every pot has its cover. How do you explain that? It's the question. So we just ignore the question. What?
They didn't have yeshivas.
In one generation,
well, that's how it happened people.
All right, you can say there are a lot. Everyone is scratching their head to figure out the cause of how this happened so quickly. But it's not to be ignored the fact that the children. The people who were intermarried were the children in the generation of Haman.
I don't see that.
And the terror that they experienced, no one knows the collateral damage and the psychological effect. All right, Rabbi Chol doesn't.
Some psychologist made that up.
We have to go to who knows? Listen, I don't know. I don't know. Really, don't know. But it's something. You know, it's not a coincidence. The numbers add up. The numbers add up. The Gemara Chazal talk about the terror the children experience. They were saved. Very nice. They were saved. Very good. But you know, we all know as children when we were afraid. You know, I'm sure everyone here, or adults, could think back to their childhood, and there were things that they were scared of, and those horrors live on with the person, unfortunately, the whole life, even though you know clear as day that, you know, it's nothing. It's nothing. And today, I remember the first time I saw a dead body. I still have nightmares. Today, unfortunately, doesn't mean anything to me. Today, unfortunately, you go to Levi, you know, you see a dead body, it doesn't have any effect. But I remember the first time I saw a dead body when I was a child, I went crazy. Mamish went crazy. The first time I saw someone bury a dead body, I was already a teenager. I never saw them lower a casket into the grave until I was probably, I don't know, 15, 16 years old. It shook me up. You can't begin to imagine. Today, doesn't like... So what? You don't believe in this?
No.
All right. To each his own. Let's go. Let's move ahead in the Rashi. Rashi says over here that Tzidkiyo was a tzaddik and a generation where we're Shoim. This is controversial because Chazal also tells that Tzidkiyo was a Rasha because he disobeyed the direct order of Yirmiyahu, who told him that he should surrender. If they would have surrendered, they would have lived. They would have remained in Yerushalayim. They would not have been intermarriage. The land would not have been empty. No one today can come along and say to the Jewish people that you're occupiers. The biggest issue we have today with the Umos HaOlam by far is the Umos, the first Rashi and Chumash, listim atem shekivashtem es haaretz. It's a reiteration of what it says in Rashi. Then it was then when the first time we took Eretz Yisrael, the claim was you stole it from the seven nations of Canaan. Today we're living with an echo of that complaint. You stole the land. You went, the Israelis, you went and you took over the land from the Arabs. You took it away from them. Okay, it's the first Rashi in Chumash today is the number one problem that haunts the Jewish people. Is it not, Rabbi Chol? Is it not? even Rabbi Chol agrees with this. Meir, what do you say? It's the number one problem. The Goyim, they say, you're occupiers, and they don't let up. They just want to hold on to this thing. The first Rashi in Chumash, in a modern form. If we would not have left Eretz Yisrael, that never could have happened. No one can ever say that we're occupiers of their land. Because the facts are, we never left. It's only because we left, we did leave the land. And then we came back. And then this happened a few times. It happened later on as well. It set into motion a cycle of Klal Yisrael abandoning the land. 52 years between the Bayis Rishon and the Bayis Sheni, there was not a living person in the land. And then the Goyim started to take back. And then we had a fight with them. And then this repeated itself continuously for the whole Tekufa of the Bayis Sheni. All right, in any event, let's go further. All of these problems are rooted in Tzidkiyahu disobeying a direct order from the Navi Yirmiyah to surrender. If he would have listened, it would have been a completely different Jewish history. If he would have surrendered, Nebuchadnezzar would have entered. He would have destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. But he would have left the vast majority of the Jewish people live in the land, remain there, and pay homage to him, and pay taxes. And ultimately, there would have been a Bayis Sheni, and the whole world would have been very, very different. So Tzidkiyahu had problems. But Rashi here does not focus on element. Rashi focuses on the good of Tzidkiyahu, that he was matzdik olav es hadin. He said that's why he's called Tzidkiyahu, Tzadiku Hashem. The one that really said those words was Yoshiyahu, but Tzidkiyahu also said something very similar. He accepted upon himself the reality that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is just in what he has done, and that's why he's called a tzaddik, and his generation is called wicked. Lo aferas o achva, shnis achvu b'nei Yehuda v'nyamin v'nidabku b'toravas malcha Yisrael. This reflecting back to the end of the Bayis Sheni, where both the Malchus of Yehuda and the Malchus of Yisrael, they worshipped idols. They learned from each other. And okay, that's the end of the pasuk. So if you read the pasuk according to the Rashi, it's a very different translation than the Mitzudos David. The pasuk just reads simply. I'll read one more time inside. For Egdas Makli Hasheni, comma. According to Rashi, the Makli Hasheni refers to Tzidkiyahu. Period. Then when it says Es Hachoyv Lim, this refers to I'm going to wipe out the people of the generation. It's two separate things, which is a very big chiddush according to Rashi, because back a few psukim before, the choivlim was the definition, was an adjective for the makel. The second makel, the first makel was the noyam, and the second makel was called the choivlim. I will call one makel noyam, I will call the second makel choivlim. And here Rashi, shockingly, he says that these two terms are completely different. The word makli, E Hasheni, period. This is the leader, Tzidkiyahu. And then when it says Es HaChoyvlim, it's a separate statement. I will also bring an end. I will cut down the people of the generation of Tzidkiyahu who were wicked, who I'm calling here Choyvlim. L'Hofer Es HaAchva. This will now bring an end to the sin. The sin, this Tekufa, when Tzidkiyahu will perish with his generation, the era of the Bayis Sheni will come to an end. And here we are giving a term, we're giving one general term to describe the Tekufa of the Bayis, the Bayis Rishon. The Tekufa of the Bayis Rishon was a Tekufa where both Yehuda, the Malchus split between Yehuda and Binyamin, and the common denominator between the two was they worshipped idols. It will now come an end to L'Hofer Es HaAchva, the brotherhood in worshipping Avodah Zarah, Ben Yehuda Uvein Yisrael. Let's see the Radak. Radak, Pasuk Yud Dalet. Vo'egda ze'amar ala chorban shagoda Tzidkiyahu, Hashem cut down Tzidkiyahu, shahoya tachlis hachoyvlim v'hamashchisim v'chodav abayis v'golu Yisrael me'aretzam. The Radak learns that the word choyvlim is part of the word makel, the makel of the choyvlim. They work together. He was the leader of these chayvlim, of this evil generation. So that's similar to what it says in the Rashi. They were the common denominator between these two was they worshipped idols. A hoof for us became bottle. Now that Yehuda went into Golus and there was no longer anyone worshipping idols, Yisrael, until he went into Golus, they did not allow anyone to worship idols. Now he's saying a tremendous chiddush here. He's saying here an incredible idea. I never heard this before, where he gets this from, and he says that Yisrael ad shagolu, what do you mean shagolu? It means, I think let's read it one more time. Let me read these words one more time. Ha'achva shahaysa ben Yehudu ben Yisrael ba'avodah zarah, period. Hufra us, the brotherhood. Why? Kevan shagolsa Yehuda, now that Yehuda went to Golis, lo nishar bi Yisrael, there was no longer a remnant in Yisrael, Oyved Avodah Zarah. Why? Ki Yisrael ad Shagolu. Now, I think what he means here, ad Shagolu means until the exile of Yehuda. Maybe I'm wrong, but maybe it means until. Who went into Golus first? The Malchus of Yisrael went into Golus first. They were in Golus at least 100 years before Yehuda went into Golus. When they went into Golus, it seems they stopped worshipping idols. Now we attribute the reason why
they stopped worshipping where?
In Golus. In Golus.
Oh, in Golus. They're not there anymore.
The Aseres HaShvatim.
Yeah.
The Aseres HaShvatim, the Radak over here seems to be saying that the Aseres HaShvatim did not disappear so quickly. Okay, they didn't disappear. He's making a lot of assumptions. I'm making a lot of assumptions and understanding what he's saying. Because no one really knows what happened. Everything is a big, big mystery. But let's make the following assumptions. And he says that when the Aseres HaShvatim went into Golos, they didn't disappear so quickly. We know that today that the Aseres HaShvatim are gone. The 10 lost tribes completely disappeared off the face of the earth. They must have assimilated into the whole world. But this did not happen overnight. When they went into Golos, now for about 200 years, plus years, maybe even 300 years, they were worshipping Avodah Zarah very seriously. Yeravam ben Nevat, Achav, Izevel. I mean, you read the Psukim, it's just shocking the degree of Avodah Zarah that took place in the Malchus of Yisrael. And then comes Sancheriv, and he exiles the Aseres HaShvatim in three waves. What the Mitzvah David seems to be saying is once they went into Golos, they cut out the nonsense. Why? Because they saw that the warnings of the prophets were correct. That's the reason. This is the beauty. That's why you learn Navi. Because even though when the Nevi'im gave over these harsh messages, the Klal Yisrael, nobody paid attention. They laughed off the Navi. But ultimately, they came around to learn that every word that the Navi said was 100% true. And when all of the predictions of the Nevi'im came true regarding the Aseres HaShvatim, they went into exile, they now finally woke up. It was too late, but they realized, you know, they were right.
But how long did that effect last?
Well, they disappeared, so it didn't really make a difference, right? They disappeared off the face of the earth. Yeah. Right? So I don't know how long it lasts, because something else went wrong.
Because if the attraction had worn off, then what was the need later on to banish the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah?
Right, we have to get it. That's thinking about the same thing. Okay, let's go one step at a time. So when they went into Golos, they stopped. They stopped worshipping idols because they realize now that the Nevi'im, their words are emes. Now what happens now? But who is still worshipping idols? The Malchus of Yehuda, because they did not yet go into Golos. But when they are taken into Golos, then they also wake up and realize, oh, the Nevi'im were correct. We should cut out the nonsense. So now, with that idea, let's read inside. So the Achva is the brotherhood. Shehoisa ben Yehuda ben Yisrael ba'avodah zara. While Yehuda and Yisrael were living in the land, they had something in common. They both worshipped idols. When they both went into Golos, at different points in time, they stopped this brotherhood. The brotherhood of worshipping idols. It came in different stages. What do we mean? For us, Kevon, Shagolsa, Yehuda. Once Yehuda, which was the second Malchus, I mean, the one that was there longer, once they went into Golos, now no longer was there a club of Ovdei Avodah Zarah. Like, I never knew this. You know, there's a national Kiddush club. They have their own website, and that their own website, their own logo. What's it called? Notice anyone was called? International Kiddush Club. No, National Kiddush Club in the whole United States of America. Can you imagine to promote to Bali Avira? Tell us to say that. They claim they're doing L'Shem Shemaim. They raise money during the Shabbos Kiddush Club. They claim they raised $70,000. $30,000. Now tell me, is that really an excuse to go and leave shul, leave the words of the prophets, the Haftorah, and insult the rabbi by not staying for his drasha? Do you really think that the money they raise at the Kiddush Club, they will have siyata d'shmaya in that money being spent? Do you really think that's there's something to money? There's different types of money. There's money that works, and then there's money that doesn't work. It's very disturbing. to think that it's an excuse. You can do an Avera and you can justify it by saying, listen, we raise money, the money goes for good causes. Maybe if you're the recipient of that money, you know, you have a different attitude towards it. But I don't know, it doesn't sound too kosher to me. In any event, Hofer Oz Kevin Shagolsa Yehuda Nulin Nishab Yishol Oyder Avadazar Ki Yishol Ad Shagalu Lohinichu Melav Avadazar Bechol Atzar Shoha Yubos Aleim. Why? Because the Kevin Shagol Avadro Ki Dibre HaNevim MS Bechom Naaretz Loi Avdu Achar Kach Avadazar. I think there's some typos in the words here. I think in panning down this text many years, I think something went wrong in the words, a little bit not so smooth. But what he seems to be saying is that once the Malchus of Yisrael went into Galus, they cut out the nonsense because they saw firsthand that the words of the prophets were emes. The Yehuda Gamkein of the Avodah Zarah Ad Shagalu. But Yehuda was still worshipping Avodah Zarah because they did not yet go into Galus. The Kevan Shagalu, when Yehuda went into Galus, Batla Avodah Zarah Mehem. Hine, so now when both Yehuda and Yisrael went into Galus, Hufra also achva shahoisa b'neim b'avodah zarah. Okay, so now, so the achva is an aber achva. It's an achva, a club of oivdei avodah zarah that came to an end when they both went into galus. And that's what he says, what Targum Yonason says, v'zvechein Targum Yonason, that I seisi nevuchad netzar, malka de bovel at sidkiyo melech, shifto de beis Yehuda, I brought Nebuchadnezzar to Yerushalayim, to exile Tzidkiyahu, and the shift of the Beis Yehuda, the shevet of Beis Yehuda, which means his malchus, the aglesi yosei, and I brought him to exile, al the ashniu kiyomo, af inun the Beis Yehuda ke'achim, because they changed, like their brothers, a Beis Yisrael, in doing. The brotherhood over here means in worshipping idols. Hine perashnu parzul shavar parsha ba acherecha al kol ponim hoisa nevuah loasa v'zman b'yisheni unifarshena acherecha shenifarish parzul v'zman b'yisheni. Okay, so he says, I've explained everything over here so far according to the past. He's just recapping that I've explained this section. I've explained it understanding that Zechariah is describing the events that have happened so far in Jewish history up until his day. Zechariah is standing on the threshold of the Bayis Sheni, the era of the Bayis Sheni, and he's looking back and describing the Bayis Rishon. So far we have a fundamental machlokes between the Radak and on one side, and Rashi and the Mitzudei Sevra on the other side, as to the meaning of the Achva. What does it mean, the Achva of Ben Yehuda and Yisrael? According to Rashi and the Mitzudos David, it refers to leadership. That until this point in time, and according to another very important point, according to Rashi and the Mitzudos David, we are referring seemingly, I mean to a degree, let's not be precise in Rashi, to the bias, the bias Sheni. The Bayis Sheni, that's to some degree, maybe not exactly, but we are referring to up until a certain point in Jewish history, there was what's called Achva Bein Yehuda V'Yisrael, brotherhood, meaning the leaders of the Jewish people were from our own, were from Mikedev Achecha. We were brothers. We led each other. It's a term which I don't know why the word brother, why brothers here refer to a leadership, but that's how they learn. The brotherhood was, we led one another. We did not allow foreign powers to rule over us. We had sovereignty. Achva basically means sovereignty, according to Rashi and the Mitzudos David. According to the Radak, Achva means it was a club. There was a brotherhood. A club, a gang.
A shared interest.
A shared interest in what? In evil, in worshipping idols. That's the Achva. And now...
They made a coalition.
a coalition, very good, to worship idols. And that now has come to an end. Now the Radak is going to give us an entirely different approach to understand these psukim. Perish Adoni Ovizal, my father, has a very different interpretation of these psukim. And he says as follows, Keinamar Hashem Yisprach, Hachiloisi Lir Oisa, he's going back to the beginning of the section. I have begun to shepherd the Jewish people. V'lokachti li shnei makles b'chirim l'roisa. I took two select staffs to serve as my leaders, as my shepherds. Noyam v'chayvlim. Okay, one is called Noyam, one is called Chayvlim. Noyam, who is Noyam? Whole new approach. Kohen Gadol. We always discuss this, the division of the parts of the government. Noyam is the Kohen Gadol. The Choyvlim Melech. Okay, this is in America. What's it called? The division of authority, the legislative branch.
Separation of powers.
Okay, this concept in America was taken from Klal Yisrael, from the Bible. And this topic is a very geschmacka topic. And how many powers are there in Klal Yisrael? 2/3. In the Torah, you really only find 2. And that's what it says here as well. The Melech, the Malchus, and the Kohen Gadol. The Malchus appears to be more of the roads and food and public health and transportation, education, you know, everything that a good government needs. And the Kohen Gadol is in charge of spirituality. In the Gemara, it seems there are 3 branches of government. There is the Kohen Gadol, the Melech, and the Av Rosh Bezdin, the Av Bezdin. And how the Av Bezdin is not the same as the Kohen Gadol. The Kohen Gadol is more of the Hashkafa. Like, you know, today in the yeshiva, this is something we don't appreciate, but it used to be, before we came to America, only like 5 years ago, before we all came to America and the Klal Yisrael was living in pre-war Europe, who was more choshev in the yeshiva? Let me just ask you a question. You'd say to someone, he's a Rosh HaYeshiva. So what do you think? Oh, he's Rosh HaYeshiva? Wow, right? I'm not mekane any Rosh Yeshiva because I know from the inside what goes on. I'm not mekane Rosh Yeshiva, and I'm certainly not mekane Rav. And then there's the Mashkiach. I'm telling you a fact. If you say to someone today, the guy, that this fellow is a Mashkiach, you know what that means? It's not a good term. It's almost a derogatory term today. To say about a person that he's the Mashkiach of a Yeshiva. You know what that means? It means he walks around the aisles the whole day and doesn't learn a word, and just basically pats everyone on the back and takes attendance and sees what's going on. It's
deals
not
the problems that Rosh Yeshiva doesn't have to
deal with all the ugly things. And this it's not a fun job to be a mashgiach. There's no glory in being a mashgiach today. It's almost a derogatory term. But believe it or not, before the war, before pre-World War, before World War II, a Mashkiach...
Who's Mashkiach in Lakewood?
Matzio Solomon.
Yes.
He's not... So
he
what is
have status?
Matzio Solomon is from the Gedolei Hadar. He was Moiser Nefesh. He's Mamish Be'emes. But let's be honest now. Matzio Solomon... this is what you're supposed to be doing. I'm not talking. This is this Gedolei Hadar, but he didn't have a chance to learn a word for the last 25 years since he became the Mashkiach, because he dealt with every single issue. He goes, who am I to say? He's the Gedolei Hadar. I don't come to his toenails. You need people like that to lead Klal Yisrael. But the facts are, people came to him for every emergency there was. And he knew how to deal with it. He was extremely successful in dealing with Shalom Bayis problems, dealing with children who were unfortunately going off the derech, dealing with matters I don't have to elaborate. You can imagine what goes on in this world. And he, the whole day, yoimam b'layla, doesn't sleep, deals with these issues in a very responsible way and has achieved incredible success. This is the Gedolei Hador. I'll bow down to him in a heartbeat. But I have to really be very careful how I nuance it. What I mean to say is, when you talk about a yeshiva, it used to be a yeshiva is a place to learn. You learn Torah, right? Isn't that what you're supposed to do in a yeshiva? You go to yeshiva to learn Torah. You should make a siyum masechta shkolim. You should know Chumash Rashi. You should know Nach. You should know Shulchan Aruch. You should know Yeridea. You should know everything. So when you talk about a mashkiach in a yeshiva, I'm not talking about a mashkiach for Klal Yisrael. Who's a mashkiach for Lakewood, dealing with 5,000 families? Okay, plus today's even more. I'm talking about in a yeshiva. You have a yeshiva. A yeshiva have 100 talmidim. So you have the Rosh HaYeshiva and you have the mashkiach. Before World War II, the mashkiach, he was the chosh of a person. The Rosh HaYeshiva was second fiddle to the mashkiach. Why? The mashkiach was the one who molded the talmidim in his hashkafa. Okay, that's the way it was. The altar, the vardig, they were mashkiach. They were the Rosh HaYeshiva. The Rosh HaYeshiva, they hired a Talmud Chacham to give some lectures. You go to college. So you have an adjunct. You hire a couple of adjuncts to teach the courses. And the big professors, what do? The whole day, they sit in their office and they twiddle their thumbs. They do research. You go to any college. I know you go to Brooklyn College. I know the big professors, they give you tenure. What happens when you get tenure? Well, first you have to, for a couple of years, you have to actually teach for a couple of years. But basically the goal is, they give you tenure because they believe that you're brilliant and you have some ideas and you'll be able to get lucrative grants for the college. You'll bring in, but you have to teach. No, you don't. Teaching, we'll hire an adjunct for $2,500. You're going to bring into the college $1 million because you have ideas and you publish and you'll get grant money. Grant money is big bucks. We'll give you a whole floor on the fifth floor to go and to do experiments that will go into the space shuttle. It brings into the college millions of dollars. We're not going to waste. You don't have to waste your time teaching. We'll get an adjunct for you, $2,500 bupkis, to go teach the courses for you. Now, lahavdil elif alfi avdolos, I don't mean in that way, but in the pre-war yeshivas, that's how it was also. The mashkiach was the mind, the heart, and the neshama of the yeshiva. He gave shmuzim, musar, hashkafa. He would talk to the talmidim to mold them into real people, to make out of them gedolim. And you have to have classes also. If the Rashiva is busy, the whole Mashkiach is busy the whole day molding Talmidim in an image that he feels is appropriate for that student, he doesn't have the time to go give every single day a knockout shiur. So he hires an adjunct. So the Rashiva is the adjunct. For $2,500, the Rashiva gives a shiur. So that's the way it used to be. It used to be in the previous generation that the Mashkiach, he was the koyach, the heart and soul of the yeshiva. And the Rosh Yeshiva gave a shiur. He was just second fiddle. Today in America, I don't know how what happened, but that's not the way it works. In America today, there's no such thing as a mashkiach anymore. When you talk about a mashkiach, you think it's about someone who works in the kitchen. Okay, someone who I know a story firsthand. I'm not telling, making this up. This isn't just to go show how in America things have changed the other way around, where a Talmid called up someone's home and said, "Can I please speak to the mashkiach?" And the wife of the mashkiach felt insulted. Her husband is not the mashkiach. Her husband was the Rosh HaYeshiva. So she said to the boy on the phone, "I'm sorry, we don't sell milk here. And she hung up the phone. The boy called back and said, can I please speak to the Rosh HaYeshiva? Oh, of course. Let me get him for you. Okay, you see how far we've gone? If you would have been in Europe and you would have said, can I please speak to the Rosh HaYeshiva? She would have hung up the phone and said, this is not a college. But in America, when you call up and you say, can I please speak to the Mashkiach, you hang up the phone. Because the terms have changed. The terminology has dramatically changed over these years. And why am I telling you all this? Because this be'etzem is the difference between the Kohen Gadol and the Av Bezdin. Over here, we're going to learn now the Radak. The Radak's father is telling us that there are two different leaders in Klai Yisrael. There's the Noyam and the Chovlim. The Noyam is the Kohen Gadol. The Chovlim is the Melech. We're only dealing here with two powers of leadership. In the Gemara, in the Talmud, it's clear as day, there are three powers in Klal Yisrael. There is the Melech, the Kohen Gadol, and the Av Bezdin. In the Beis HaMikdash, there was the Lishka Sagozis, where there was the Sanhedrin of the 70 members of Sanhedrin sat. And in the Azara, and in the Ezras Noshim, there was another, the Sanhedrin Ketana, another 23 judges. For grand total of 93 Dayanim, and there was a Rosh Av Bezdin, and the Rosh Av Bezdin was a major player in Klal Yisrael. So how does the Rosh Av Bezdin differentiate himself from the Kohen Gadol? And the answer is, like pre-war Europe, the Kohen Gadol was the Mashkiach. He set policy. He presented the Hashkofa. Whereas the Av Bezdin was just a technical, the dayanim, the halacha. What's the psak halacha? What are the issues? You know, anytime you go, like even today, you go to yeshiva. Most Rosh Yeshivas are not poiskim. You go to yeshiva, you ask a Rosh Yeshiva a question. He sends you to a poisek. That's not my specialty. What do you mean it's not your specialty? Don't you sit and learn the whole day? That's not the way they view themselves, Rosh Yeshiva today. They view themselves today like the Kohen Gadol. For the Psak Halacha, for the technical matters, Psak Halacha, you go to the Poskim, people who specialize in Piskei Halacha. Okay, so this is a very important Yesod. Division of power. In the Chumash, it's only mentioned two powers. The Kohen Gadol and the Melech. In the Gemara, there's mention of three. And that's what the Lishkas Hagozis, in the Mishkan, it's very interesting, in the Mishkan, think about this, in the Mishkan, there's no Lishkas Hagozis. When you study the Mishkan, right? You have the Mishkan in Parashas Terumah, Tetzaveh, Vayakal Pekudei, the blueprint of the Mishkan, which ultimately turned into the Beis HaMikdash. It's a very big mystery. Why is there no Lishkas Hagozis in the Mishkan? The Mishkan, you have all the Kalim, and that's it. When they went and they made a Mikdash built into the Azara, it was half was in the Azara, is the Sanhedrin. Excuse me, where did that come from? Where did that element come from? I don't know. But it's a fact. There are three branches of leadership in the Gemara. And here we're only mentioning two. We're mentioning of the Noyam, and we're mentioning the Chovlim. We're mentioning Chovlim. Chovlim is the Melech. Al-Koy, I'm reading over here on page 825. Al-Koy Nemar, it says, Ki Sifse Koyin Yishmudas. Regarding the Koyin, it says, Koyin is Yishmudas. We Amar Vidas Lenavshecha Yinam be pleasant. Why? Because he's making over here this like A equals B, B equals C, to show that the word Noyam is a code word for the Kohen Gadol. The Chovlim is Melech Malchus, Bavur Shukmoy Harav HaChovel. Why? So he says Chovel is an incredible chish. He does not learn the word Chovel to mean, this is the father of the Radak, mind-boggling perish. It doesn't mean a destroyer. It means a rope, a ship. Klal Yisrael is an aniyah, one big ship in a stormy stormy waters, and the captain of the ship is called Rav HaChovel, the person in charge of pulling the ropes, pulling the sails to guide the ship. So the Chovelim are the ropes. So who pulls the ropes in Klal Yisrael? The Melech. The Melech is the one who pulls the ropes. When should we go to war? When should we surrender? When should we raise taxes? When should we lower taxes? When should we build a bridge to nowhere? Because it's good political stunts. And when should we be practical and do something that really helps the people? Everything, they're called the Rav HaChovelim. Ropes. Even though I have guided Klal Yisrael with a melech and with a kohen gadol, and I did not allow the nations of the world to have any influence upon you, lechazu lemuta of Hashem is complaining you did not do teshuva. I send three prophets. Who are the prophets? So he learns Haggai, Zechariah, Umalachi. Those are the three shepherds that came that disappeared. The Yerach Echad. Do you remember how many Perushim we had in those psukim? The three shepherds that disappeared in 1 month. Here you have to add to the list another Perush. Haggai, Zechariah, Umalachi, they were the last three prophets of Klal Yisrael. I gave them Musar, like it says. So therefore, I brought an end to them. I took them away from you. Like it says, they died in 1 month. Here we learn that Haggai, Zechariah, Umalachi, they died in one Tekufa, according to the Radak's father. There was no more Nevuah, that was the end of Nevuah. They one era. And you rejected me, I rejected you. We had this before. The three different stages of the growth of a fig are the three terms which we're going to use to describe the leaders. Boichal el hanurim, okay, Shabbas gedoyla, v'ra'av kotzba. Uperush tsemel yotza malei. Now, what does it mean over here? Shabbas gedoyla v'ra'av kotzba. Okay, I'm not sure what that means over here. Uperish Samuel Yotza Malaya Shahi Bageres Vinoyash Avia Milahasia Mirov Shifta Babais. And the father gave up from marrying her off because Mirov Shifta Babais. It's very interesting what he says over here. He's saying over here an idea. He's calling over here. We had this before in the group, but he has a whole new interpretation of what these three words mean. We learned before we have figs. There are three stages in the growth of a fig. Paga, when they're immature. Boichal is when they ripen. And Tsemel is when they are fully mature. And the Radak's father was telling us that these three stages refer to the aspirations of the father regarding her shidduch prospects. When a girl is a child, Paga. Paga, he doesn't say what the word Paga, doesn't say what the word Paga refers, but it seems like that's when the father wants to marry her off. In ancient times, parents married off their daughters when they were children, before they had a mind of their own to start making decisions and making trouble for their parents. The father would marry off a girl when she was a child. Once a girl became 12 years old and was not married, the father was fed up. And he calls that stage in life called Bochal. A girl who is now mature, she becomes 12 or 12 and a half, and she's still not married. Her father says, "Uh-oh, I'm fuming mad." He's mad at himself, probably, that he failed to marry her off by this time. So the Radak's father wants to borrow this term, boichal, to explain the word. Remember, when we had this word in the pasuk, we struggled. It says that Hashem says, my neshama became short with you, and you also were boichal bi. And we had a big discussion, what does that word mean? There is no precedent for that word. And all the Mepharshim basically said it means, means to detest, mi'us. What? Why does the word boichal mean mi'us? Where in the world does detest?
Or impatient.
Okay, impatient. Where does that word have any connection to the word bochal? Where, show me a source, a precedent, that the combination of those letters has any resemblance to an expression meaning to detest. So we had other perushim back then, but right now the Radak's father says, I'll tell you the Mukar, because Chazal tell us that there are three stages in the development of a fig. There is paga, boichal, and semel. And the middle stage is called semel. And why is it's called boichal. And why is a girl, when is that stage of development by a girl, by a person's daughter, when she reaches maturity? And in ancient times, when a girl was not married, by the time she was 12 and a half years old, it was basically hopeless. And the father was furious. He was angry. He hated himself because of his failure to marry her off by that age. So just like in that context, the word boichal means to detest. He hates himself. So too, when it's used here in this pasuk Hashem, that we were boichal by Hashem, we showed Hashem contempt. Mius. It's a tremendous chesh. Pag boichal. So remember, pag boichal eli me'anurim shehabas gidoyla. The child becomes an adult. Ve'ho'av kotzpa. He hates her. He really hates himself because he failed to marry her off. And then the third girl was a perish semel yotzamaleya. When the girl is an adult, she's 20 years old. Okay, most girls don't even think about dating until they're 20 years old. But in those times, when the time of 20 years, not married, forget it. She begeres v'noyash avia. Her father gave up hope. Milahasia, because she already, if she didn't get married by now, she's never getting married. Well, guess what, there, Rabbi Isai? 50 is the new 12. Okay, these rules don't apply today. Okay, we have to stop over here. It's early. We'll continue tomorrow. But obviously, it's very fascinating. The Radak's father has a whole new take on every single thing over here. All right, I'll take a very short break. And after the break, I want to go talk about today's Rosh Chodesh Iyar. And we'll discuss a little bit about Rosh Chodesh Iyar. And then we'll discuss a few things about the parasha. A few different short ideas relating to the parasha. When we come back in a few moments.
Is the kitchen open for coffee?
No.
I'll make coffee.
I have the key?
9:30 closes?
No, it was
a bit later. Yeah.
Oh, all right. You want a cereal? I can give you a cereal.
Thank you. I've been trying to lobby for
you. Phil Friedman. Phil. Good morning, everybody. A good Chodesh.
Is Mark there? Mark?
Shalom, Rav Kalman.
Yeah, Shalom Aleichem. Is Mark still on?
Yeah.
When's he going?
I guess in August.
Ah, Shalom Aleichem, welcome.
You know how you tell...
Great to be back, Baruch Hashem.
You know when you don't have to change the water in the mikveh? How do you know when you have to change the water in the mikveh?
How are you? It's so good to see you.
You throw it away preserver. After it comes out of primal.
We're getting back to...
How you doing, Ezra? I saw you online.
Yeah, good to see everybody in person. We're doing that. Yeah.
Yesterday came to the back door.
No, 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 from East 29th Street.
You walk or you took the bike?
I took the bike, I just need to bring it in here.
And also, one day the mail came very early.
So what's the story? Mask, no mask, what do we do here?
If you stay a distance, you don't
have a choice.
Okay.
Valley21@AOL.com.
I'll tell you, I was crazy over mask though. I see the patients, there's got to be time when we got to back the vaccinated, the time we got to get back.
You had your shots.
I'm sorry?
You had your shots.
Yeah, I had a shot.
All right.
My mother got her shot later in the month, and that's it.
You're not worried. Your mask is an extra precaution.
Wish I said it was an idiot.
Where are you? It's an extra precaution, that's all.
You vaccinated, right? You got the shots. So you got the shots. You can see it.
I waited. I got both shots. My mother got her shots. I waited a period of time. At a certain point, I got to move out and get back to life.
Purple one is coming, purple one.
Oh, good.
Thank you.
I don't have any sugar in there. There's no sugar.
Put out the Pesach. There's an ad in the paper. Gebak not sukkahs.
Not sukkahs.
Yeah. They're saying they're so fresh. We bake it every couple of days. We bake it after sukkahs, we bake it at Shavuos, after Pesach.
That's funny.
But the ad says gebak not sukkahs.
That's funny. That is funny.